My name is Brian Moore, and I'm on staff here. I work in the kitchen. And I'm going to start out and just read some Robert Service poetry to you. And if you have some requests, just feel free to raise your hand and just yell them out to me. We are going to read information from Sam McGee. Okay. Let's see. I thought, though, that I would start out with one other than Sam McGee and start out with The Spell of the Yukon. The Spell of the Yukon. I wanted the gold, and I sought it. I scrabbled and mucked like a slave. Was it famine or scurvy, I fought it. I hurled my youth into a grave. I wanted the gold, and I got it. Came out with a fortune last fall, yet somehow life's not what I thought it, and somehow the gold isn't all. No, there's the land. Have you seen it? It's the cussedest land that I know, from the big, dizzy mountains that screen it to the deep, death-like valleys below. Some say God was tired when he made it. Some say it's a fine land to shun, maybe, but there's some as would trade it for no land on earth, and I'm one. You come to get rich, damn good reason. You feel like an exile at first. You hate it like hell for a season, and then you are worse than the worst. It grips you like some kinds of sinning. It twists you from foe to a friend. It seems it's been since the beginning. It seems it will be to the end. I've stood in some mighty mouth hollow that's plumb full of hush to the brim. I've watched the big husky sun wallow in crimson and gold and grow dim, till the moon set the pearly peaks gleaming and the stars tumbled out neck and crop. And I thought that I surely was dreaming with the peace of the world piled on top. The summer no sweeter was ever, the sunshiny woods all athrill, the grayling aleap in the river, the bighorn asleep on the hill, the strong life that never knows harness, the wild where the caribou call, the freshness, the freedom, the farness. Oh God, how I'm struck on it all. The winter, the brightness that blinds you, the white land locked tight as a drum, the cold fear that follows and finds you, the silence that bludgeons you dumb, the snows that are older than history, the woods where the weird shadows slant, the stillness, the moonlight, the mystery. I bade them goodbye, but I can't. There's a land where the mountains are nameless, and the rivers all run God knows where. There are lives that are erring and aimless, and deaths that just hang by a hair. There are hardships that nobody reckons. There are valleys unpeopled and still. There's a land, oh, it beckons and beckons, and I want to go back, and I will. They're making my money diminish. I'm sick of the taste of champagne. Thank God when I'm skinned to a finish, I'll pipe to the Yukon again. I'll fight, and you bet it's no sham fight. It's hell, but I've been there before, and it's better than this quiet damn sight. So me for the Yukon once more. There's gold, and it's haunting and haunting. It's luring me on as of old. Yet it isn't the gold that I'm wanting so much as just finding the gold. It's the great big broad land way up yonder. It's the forests where silence has lease. It's the beauty that thrills me with wonder. It's the stillness that fills me with peace. Okay, let's move on here. I'm going to read a poem called Anthill. And I guess one thing I like about Service's poetry, it's very, you know, it's the rhymesy stuff. I really get into that. And sometimes, I guess I used to think of him as being just a lot of fun stuff. And he says a lot to me in his poetry. I see a lot of insights into human nature and life's situations. And I'm going to read this poem called Anthill. Black ants have made a musty mound my purple pine tree under, and I am often to be found regarding it with wonder. Yea, as I watch, somehow it's odd. Above their busy striving, I feel like an ironic god surveying human striving. Then one day came my serving maid, and just in time I caught her, for on each lusty arm she weighed a pail of boiling water. Said she with glee, "When this I spill, of life they'll soon be lacking." Said I, "If even one you kill, you bitch, I'll send you packing." Just think, 10,000 eager lives in that toil won of casting. Their homes, their babies, and their wives destroyed in one fell blasting. Imagine that swift, scalding hell, and though mayhap it seem a fantastic, far-fetched parallel, remember Hiroshima.
When did he die?
Oh, gosh. No, I was looking in the library up there for some history on the service. I wanted to give some history, but I couldn't find anything on him. I think it was, what, the mid-1900s, I would think. Does anyone know?
If he knew about Hiroshima, it'd have to be 44.
Yeah, that surprised me.
Mm-hmm. So it's probably around the 50s or mid-50s or so. Okay. Let's see here. I didn't pick any specific order, so I'm just going to look down the ones I marked and kind of read through if you will. Let's see. Here's another one called Granddad. Yeah. Heaven's mighty sweet, I guess. Ain't no rush to get there. Been a sinner, more or less. Maybe wouldn't fit there. Wicked still, bound to confess. Might just pine a bit there. Heaven's swell, the preachers say. Got so used to earth here. Had such good times all the way. Frolic, fun, and myrrh here. 80 springs ago today, since I had my birth here. Quite a spell of happy years. Wish I could begin it. Cloud and sunshine, laughter, tears. Living every minute. Women, too, the pretty dears. Plenty of them in it. Heaven, that's another tale. Might let me chew there. Gotta have me pot of ale. Would I like to brew there? Maybe I'd get slack and stale. No more chores to do there. Here I weed the garden plot, scare the crows from pillage, simmer in the sun a lot, talk about the tillage, yarn of battles I have fought, graybeard of the village. Heaven's mighty fine, I know. Still, it ain't so bad here. See them maples all aglow? Starlings seem so glad here. I'll be mighty peeved to go. Scrumptious times I've had here. Lord, I know you'll understand. With your light, you'll lead me. Though I'm not the pious friend, I'm here when you need me. Gosh, I know that heaven's grand, but dang it, God, don't speed me. Well, I think I'll read you one of the longer little versions here. It's called Clancy and the Mounted Police. And the reason I wrote that little bit of art on the board up there is just so we get the right atmosphere. You know, you see, I'm not an artist in the, you know, at least a drawing artist, and so, but you have to just imagine and pretend that we're outside and here's the mountain we see or something. So, Clancy of the Mounted Police. In the little crimson manual, it's written plain and clear that who would wear the scarlet coat shall say goodbye to fear, shall be a guardian of the right, a sleuth-hound of the trail. In the little crimson manual, there's no such word as fail. Shall follow on though heavens fall or hell's top turrets freeze, half round the world if need there be, on bleeding hands and knees. It's duty, duty, first and last, the crimson manual saith. The scarlet rider makes reply, it's duty to the death. And so they sweep the solitudes, free men from all the earth. And so they sentinel the woods, the wilds that know their worth. And so they scour the startled plains and mock at hurt and pain, and read their crimson manual and find their duty plain. Knights of the lists of unrenown, born of a frontier's need, disdainful of the spoken word, exultant in the deed. Unconscious heroes of the waste, proud players of the game, props of the power behind the throne, upholders of the name, for thus the great white chief hath said, in all my lands be peace. And to maintain his word, he gave his west the scarlet police. Livid lit was the valley, still as the grave of God, misty shadows of mountain thinned into mists of cloud. Corpse-like and stark was the land, with a quiet that crushed and awed, and the stars of the weird subarctic glimmered over its shroud. Deep in the trench of the valley, two men stationed at the post, Seymour and Clancy, the reckless, fresh from the long patrol, Seymour the sergeant, and Clancy who made his boast, he could cinch like a bronco the Northland and cling to the prongs of the pole. Two lone men on detachment, standing for law on the trail, undismayed in the vastness, wise from the wisdom of old, out of the night hailed a half-breed telling a pitiful tale. White man starving and crazy on the banks of the Nordenskjold. Up sprang the red-haired Clancy, lean and eager of eye, loaded the long toboggan, strapped each dog at its post. world is lashed at the leader, then with a whoop and a cry, into the great white silence faded away like a ghost. The clouds were a misty shadow, the hills were a shadowy mist. Sunless, voiceless, and pulseless, the day was a dream of woe. Through the ice rifts, the river smoked and bubbled and hissed. Behind was a trail fresh broken, in front the untrodden snow. Ahead of the dogs plowed Clancy, hallowed by streaming breath, through peril of open water, through ache of insensate cold, up rivers wantonly winding, in a land affianced to death. Till he came to a cowering cabin on the banks of Norden Skold, then Clancy loosed his revolver and he strode through the open door, and there was the man he sought for, crouching beside the fire. The hair of his head was singeing, the frost on his back was horror, and ever he crooned and chanted, as if he never would tire. I panned in the shiny sand, and I sniped on the river bar, but I know that it's down below that the golden treasures are. So I'll wait and wait till the floods abate, and I'll sink a shaft once more, and I'd like to bet that I'll go home yet with the brass band playing before. He was nigh as thin as a silver, and he whined like a moose-hide cur, so Clancy clothed him and nursed him as a mother nurses a child. Lifted him on the toboggan, wrapped him in robes of fur, then with a dog sore straining, started to face the wild. Said the wild, I will crush this Clancy, so fearless and insolent. For him will I loose my fury, and blind and buffet and beat. Pile up my snows to stay him, then with his strength is spent. Leap on him from my ambush, and crush him under my feet. Him will I ring with my silence, compass him with my cold, closer and closer clutch him unto mine icy breast. Buffet him with my blizzards, deep in my snows and fold, claiming his life as my tribute, giving my wolves the rest. Clancy crawled through the vastness, o'er him the hate of the wild. Full on his face fell the blizzard, cheering his huskies he ran, fighting fierce-hearted and tireless snows that drifted and piled, with ever and ever behind him singing the crazy man. Sing hey, sing ho, for the ice and snow, and a heart that's ever merry, let us trimmant with a square, with a lover's care, for why should a man be sorry? A grave deep, deep, with the moon apeep, a grave in the frozen mold. Sing hey, sing ho, for the winds that blow, and a grave deep down in the ice and snow, a grave in the land of gold. Day after day of darkness, the whirl of the seething snows, day after day of blindness, the swoop of the stinging blast, on through a blur of fury, the swing of staggering blows, on through a world of turmoil, empty, inane, and vast. Night with its writhing storm whirl, night despairingly black, night with its hours of terror, numb and endlessly long, night with its weary waiting, fighting the shadows back, and ever the crouching madman singing his crazy song. Cold with its creeping terror, cold with its sudden clinch, cold so utter you wonder if 'twill ever again be warm, Clancy grinned as he shuddered, surely it isn't a cinch. Being wet nurse to a loony in the teeth of an Arctic storm. The blizzard passed and the dawn broke, knife-edged and crystal clear. The sky was a blue-domed iceberg, sunshine outlawed away. Ever by snowslide and ice rip haunted and hovered with fear. Ever the wild malignant poised and panted to slay. The lead dog freezes in harness, cut him out of a team. The lung of the wheel dog's bleeding, shoot him and let him lie. On and on with the others, lash them until they scream, pull for your lives, you devils, on, to halt is to die. There in the frozen vastness, Clancy fought with his foes, the ache of the stiffened fingers, the cut of the snowshoe thong, cheeks black raw through the hood flap, eyes that tingled and closed, and ever to urge and cheer him, quavered the madman's song. Colder it grew and colder, till the last heat left the earth, and there in the great stark stillness, the bale fires glinted and gleamed, and the wild all around exulted and shook with a devilish mirth. And life was far and forgotten, the ghost of a joy once dreamed. Death, then one who defied it, the man of the mounted police, fought it there to a standstill long after hope was gone, grinned through his bitter anguish, fought without let or cease, suffering, straining, striving, stumbling, struggling on, till the dogs lay down in their traces and rose and staggered and fell, till the eyes of him dimmed with shadows, and the trail was hard to see, till the wild howled out triumphant, and the world was a frozen hell. Then said Constable Clancy, I guess that it's up to me. Far down the trail they saw him, and his hands, they were blanched like bone. His face was a blackened horror. From his eyelids, the salt rheum ran. His feet he was lifting strangely, as if they were made of stone, but safe in his arms and sleeping he carried the crazy man. So Clancy got into barracks, and the boys made rather a scene, and the OC called him a hero and was nice as a man could be. But Clancy gazed down his trousers at the place where his toes had been, and then he howled like a husky and sang in a shaky key. When I go back to the old love that's true to the fingertips, I say, here's bushels of gold, love, and I'll kiss my girl on her lips. It's yours to have and to hold, love, it's the proud, proud boy I'll be when I go back to the old love that's waited so long for me. Okay. I worked at camp a lot with kids, and sometimes I use services poetry for morning devotions or something. There's even a poem that I use to talk about the Lutheran view on grace, and I'm going to read that one now, maybe see what you think. See if I'm on a little bit or not. Maybe I'm off, I don't know, but it's called The Outlaw. A wild and woeful race he ran, of lust and sin by land and sea, until abhorred of God and man, they swung him from the gallows tree. And then he climbed the starry stair, and dumb and naked and alone, with head unbowed and brazen glare, he stood before the judgment throne. The keeper of the records spoke, "This man, O Lord, has mocked thy name. The weak have wept beneath his yoke, the strong have fled before his flame. The blood of babes is on his sword, his life is evil to the brim. Look down, decree his doom, O Lord. Lo, there is none will speak for him." The golden trumpets blew a blast that echoed in the crypts of hell, for there is judgment to be passed, and lips were hushed and silence fell. The man was mute, he made no stir, erect before the judgment seat. When all at once a mongrel cur crept out and cowered and licked his feet. It licked his feet with whining cry, come heaven, come hell, what did it care? It leapt, it tried to catch his eye. Its master, yea, its God was there. Then, as a thrill of wonder sped through throngs of shining seraphim, the judge of all looked down and said, "Lo, here is one who pleads for him. And who shall love of these the least, and who by word or look or deed shall pity show to bird or beast? By me shall have a friend in need. Aye, though his sin be black as night, and though he stand mid men alone, he shall be softened in my sight and find a pleader by my throne. So let this man to glory win, from life to life salvation glean, by pain and sacrifice and sin, until he stand before me clean. For he who loves the least of these, and here I say and here repeat, shall win himself and angels please for mercy at my judgment seat." Okay. Well, I'm going to read another good one here, and I think a lot of you might know it or have heard it before. Just got to find it. Okay. The Cremation of Sam McGee.
Can I interject one thing here?
Oh, sure.
You were talking about, I want your voice to rest anyway. Cool. You said that you worked with kids, and I've been involved in scouts for quite a while.
All right, yeah.
And I remember a young man got up around the campfire, there were probably 150 Boy Scouts all poking each other and having a good time. And he got up and started to recite from memory the cremation of Sam McGee. And he had those kids literally on the top of his hand. And then they are hanging on every word that he spoke. It was just exciting.
Yeah. And sometimes you can throw a cedar branch in the fire.
Yeah, right. All kinds of
yeah. It's fun. You know, the kids I've had too, they've never liked poetry a lot. But they do like Robert Service, and they just get into it when I read it to them at night with the lights out and stuff. Anyway, let's see what I can do. The Cremation of Sam McGee. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake DeBarge I cremated Sam McGee. Now, Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows. Why he left his home in the South to roam round the pole, God only knows. He was always cold, but the land of gold seemed to hold him like a spell. Though he'd often say in his homely way that he'd sooner live in hell. On Christmas Day, we were mushing our way over the Dawson Trail. Tuck of your cold through the carcass hole that stabbed like a driven nail. If our eyes we closed and the lashes froze till sometimes we couldn't see, it wasn't much fun, but the only one to whimper was Sam McGee. And that very night, as we lay packed tight in our robes beneath the snow, and the dogs were fed and the stars o'erhead were dancing heel and toe, he turned to me and, "Pap," says he, "I'll cash in this trip, I guess, and if I do, I'm asking that you won't refuse my last request." Well, he seemed so low that I couldn't say no, then he says with a sort of moan, "It's the cursed cold, and it's got right hold till I'm chilled clean through to the bone. Yet Tink being dead is my awful dread of the icy grave that pains, so I want you to swear that, foul or fair, you'll cremate my last remains." A pal's last need is a thing to heed, so I swore I would not fail. And we started on at the streak of dawn, but God, he looked ghastly pale. He crouched on the sleigh, and he raved all day of his home in Tennessee. And before nightfall, a corpse was all that was left of Sam McGee. There wasn't a breath in that land of death, and I hurried, horror-driven, with a corpse half-hid that I couldn't get rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to the sleigh, and it seemed to say, "You may tax your brawn and brains, but you promised true, and it's up to you to cremate those last remains." Now, a promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. In the days to come, though my lips were dumb and my heart, how I cursed that load. In the long, long night by the lone firelight, while the huskies round in a ring howl out their woes to the homeless snows, oh God, how I loathe the thing. And every day that quiet clay seemed to heavy and heavier grow, and on I went, though the dogs were spent and the grub was getting low. The trail was bad and I felt half mad, but I swore I would not give in. And I'd often sing to the hateful thing, and it hearkened with a grin, till I came to the marge of Lake DeBarge, and a derelict there lay. It was jammed in the ice, but I saw in a trice it was called the Alice May. And I looked at it, and I thought of it, and I looked at my frozen chum. Then, "Here," said I, with a sudden cry, "is my crematorium." Some planks I tore from the cabin floor, and I lit the boiler fire. Some coal I found that was lying around, and I heaped the fuel higher. The flames just soared, and the furnace roared such a blaze you seldom see. And I burrowed a hole in the glowing coal, and I'd stuffed in Sam McGee. Then I made a hike, for I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I don't know why, and the greasy smoke in an inky cloak went streaking down the sky. I do not know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear, but the stars came out, and they danced about ere again I ventured near. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, "I'll just take a peep inside. I guess he's cooked, and it's time I looked." Then the door I opened wide. And there sat Sam, looking cool and calm in the heart of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile you could see a mile, and he said, "Please close that door. It's fine in here, but I greatly fear you'll let in the cold and storm. Since I left Plumtree down in Tennessee, it's the first time I've been warm." There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake DeBarge I cremated Sam McGee. That's one of my favorites. It's like, go.
I grew up in Skagway, Alaska, so all this poem really, touched me.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad other people know about it a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm Oregon, and a lot of people in Oregon don't even know about some Robert Service poems, good old poems. Not sure. I'll do a few short ones here. Just for the fun of it. This is called Maternity. There once was a square, such a square little square, and he loved a trim triangle. But she was a flirt, and around her skirt, vainly she made him dangle. oh, he wanted to wed, and he had no dread of domestic woes and wrangles, for he thought that his fate was to procreate cute little squares and triangles. Now it happened one day on that geometric way, there swaggered a big bold cube with a haughty stare, and he made that square have the air of a perfect boob. To his solid spell the triangle fell, and she thrilled with love's sweet sickness, for she took delight in his breadth and height, but how she adored his bigness. So that poor little square just died of despair, for his love he could not strangle, while the big bold cube led through the bridal bed that cute and acute triangle. The square's sad lot she has long forgot, and his passionate pretensions, for she dotes on her kids. Oh, such cute pyramids in a world of three dimensions. I have his collected works at home, a big thick book, and he does a lot of poems about the war. I'm thinking it's World War I. This is called Funk. When your marrer bone seems holler, and you're glad you ain't no taller, and you're all a-shaking like you add the chills, when your skin creeps like a pullet's, and you're ducking all the bullets, and you're green as gorgonzola around the gills, when your legs seem made of jelly, and you're squeamish in the belly, and you want to turn about and do a bunk, for God's sake, kid, don't show it, don't let your mateys know it, you're just suffering from funk. Funk, funk. Of course, there's no denying that it ain't so easy trying to grin and grip your rifle by the butt when the old world rips asunder and you see your pal go under as a bunch of shrapnel sprays him on the nuts. I admit it's hard contriving when your ears, the shells arriving, to discover you're a bloomin' bit of spunk. But, my lad, you've got to do it, and your God will see you through it, for what he hates is funk, funk, funk. So stand up, son, look gritty, and just a lively ditty, and only be afraid to be afraid. Just hold your rifle steady and have your bayonet ready, for that's the way good soldiermen is made. And if you has to die, as it sometimes happens, why, far better die a arrow than a skunk, a-doing a your bits, and so to hell with it. There ain't no bloomin' funk, funk, funk.
Sounds like Kipling is a good age too.
Yeah. No kidding. The shooting of Dan McGrew? Yeah, I'm gonna read that one up down the line here. Try to find one here. Oh, here we go. I'll do a shooting of Dan McGrew right after this. This is one I used for my youth newsletter at Easter time, and I thought it had some things to say in it. It's called The Quest. I sought him on the purple seas. I sought him on the peaks of flame. Amid the gloom of giant trees and canyons lone, I called his name. The wasted ways of earth I trod, in vain, I found not God. I sought him in the hives of men, the cities grand, the hamlets gray, the temples old beyond my ken, the tabernacles of today. All life that is, from cloud to clod, I sought. Alas, I found not God. Then after roamings far and wide, in streets and seas and deserts wild, I came to stand at last beside the deathbed of my little child. Lo, as I bent beneath the rod, I raised my eyes, and there was God. Let's do the shooting of Dan McGrew. A bunch of the boys were whooping up in the Malamute Saloon. The kid that handles the music box was hitting a jagtime tune. Back with a bar in a solo game sat dangerous Dan McGrew. And watching his luck was his light of love, the lady that's known as Lou. When out of the night, which was 50 below, and into the din and the glare, there stumbled a miner fresh from the creeks, dog dirty and loaded for bear. He looked like a man with a foot in the grave and scarcely the strength of a louse, yet he tilted a poke of dust in the bar and he called for drinks for the house. There was none to place the stranger's face, so we searched ourselves for a clue, but we drank his health, and the last to drink was dangerous than the rude. Whereas men might somehow just grip your eyes and hold them hard like a spell, and such was he, and he looked to me like a man who had lived in hell, with a face most hair and the dreary stare of a dog whose day is done, as he watered the green stuff in his glass, and the drops fell one by one. And I got to figuring who he was, and wondering what he'd do, and I turned my head, and there watching him was a lady that's known as Lou. His eyes went rubbering round the room, and he seemed in a kind of daze, till at last that old piano fell in the way of his wandering gaze. The ragtime kid was having a drink. There was no one else on the stool, so the stranger stumbles across the room and flops down there like a fool. In a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt, he sat, and I saw him sway, and he clutched the keys with his tallen hands. My God, but that man could play! Were you ever out in the great alone when the moon was awful clear, and the icy mountains hemmed you in with a silence you most could hear? With only the howl of a timber wolf, and you camped there in the cold, a half-dead thing in a stark, dead world, clean mad for the muck called gold. While high overhead, green, yellow, and red, the northern lights swept in bars, then you a hunch what the music meant, hunger and night and the stars. And hunger not the belly kind that's banished with bacon and beans, but the gnawing hunger of lonely men for a home and all that it means. For a fireside far from the cares that are, four walls and a roof above, but oh, so crammed full of cozy joy and crowned with a woman's love. A woman dearer than all the world, and true as heaven is true. God, how ghastly she looks through her rouge, the lady that's known as Lou. Then on a sudden, the music changed so soft that you scarce could hear, but you felt that your life had been looted clean of all that is once held dear. That someone had stolen the woman you loved, that her love was a devil's lie, that your guts were gone, and the best for you was to crawl away and die. 'Twas the crowning cry of a heart's despair, and it thrilled you through and through. I guess I'll make it a spread misery, said dangerous Dan McGrew. The music almost died away, then it burst like a pent-up flood, and it seemed to say, repay, repay, and my eyes were blind with blood. The thought came back of an ancient wrong, and it stung like a frozen lash. And the lust awoke to kill, and the music stopped with a crash. And the stranger turned, and his eyes they burned in a most peculiar way. In a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt he sat, and I saw him sway. And his lips went in a kind of grin, and he spoke, and his voice was calm. And, boys, said he, you don't know me, and none of you care a damn. But I want to state, and my words are straight, and I'll bet my poke they're true, that one of you is a hound of hell, and that one is Dan McGrew. And then I ducked my head, and the lights went out, and two guns blazed in the dark, and a woman screamed, and the lights went up, and two men lay stiff and stark. Pitched on his head and pumped full of lead was dangerous Dan McGrew, while the man from the creeks lay clutched to the breast of the lady that's known as Lou. These are the simple facts of the case, and I guess I ought to know. They say that the stranger was crazed with hooch, and I'm not denying it so. I'm not so wise as the lawyer guys, but strictly between us two, the woman that kissed him and pinched his poke was a lady that's known as Lou. Okay. I'm going to read another here called Riviera Honeymoon. This is a rather fun poem. I wrote it last week down the lift. We had ghost stories. Not necessarily a ghost story, but a kid's guide to it. You'll see why. Riviera Honeymoon. Beneath the trees, I lounged at ease and watched them speed the pace. They swerved and swung, they clutched and clung, they leapt in a roaring chase. The crowd was thrilled, a chap was killed, it was a splendid race. Two men, they say, went west that day, but I knew only one. Geranium red, his blood was spread and blazoned in the sun. A lightning crash, low in a flash. His racing days were done. I did not see, such sights to me appallingly are grim, but for a girl of sunny curl, I would not mention him. that English lad with grin so glad and racing togs so trim. His motorbike was painted like a postal box of red. 'Twas gay to view, we bought it new, a voice beside me said. Our little bit we blew on it the day that we were wed. We took a chance, through sunny France we flashed with flaunting power. With happy smiles, 100 miles or more we made an hour. Like flame we hurled into a world of foam with fruit and flower. Our needs were small, we risked them all, this famous race to win. So we can take a shop and make our bread. One must begin. We're not afraid. Jack has his trade. He's bright as brassy pin. Hark, here they come. Uphill they hum. My lad has second place. They swing, they roar. They pass once more. Now Jack sprints up the pace. They're whizzing past. At last, he leaves. He'll win the race. Another round, they leap, they bound, but where, oh, where is he? And then the girl with sunny curl turned chop-faced unto me. Within her eyes, a wild surmise, it was not good to see. They say like thunderbolt he crashed into a wall of stone. To bloody muck, his face was mashed, he died without a moan. In borrowed black, the girl went back to London town alone. Beneath the trees, I lounged at ease and saw them pep the pace. They swerved and swung, they clutched and clung, and roaring was the chase. 2 men, they say, were croaked that day. It was a glorious race. Okay. Well, I've been doing a lot of reading, and so if anyone have any requests, any favorites, or anything like that?
How about the song of the Parsons?
Let's see, that's in here. I believe it is. Steve in here. I think I have it in my collected work at home. But this is just a, you know, short little book. I wish I had it though. Gosh, any more? I hope I have it here. I'll feel bad if I have to say I don't have it here again. You know. Oh, here's one. God's Scallywags. The God of Scribes looked down and saw the bitter band of 7 who had outraged his holy law and lost their hope of heaven. Came villain, petty thief, and pimp, and obscene Baudelaire, and Byron with his lecker limp, and Poe with starry stare, and Wilde who had lived his hell on earth, and Burns the body barred, and Francis Thompson from his birth malevolently starred. As like a line of livid ghosts they stared to paradise, the galaxy of heaven's hopes looked down in soft surmise. Said God, you bastards of my love, you are my chosen sons. Come, I will set you high above these merely holy ones. Your sins you've paid in gall and grief. So to these radiant skies, seducer, drunkard, dopester, thief, immortally arise. I am your father, fond and just, and all your follies see, your bestiality and lust, I also know in me. You did the task I gave to you. Arise and sit beside my son, the best beloved, who was also crucified. Anyone else have any one I can try and see if it's in here? If not, I'll just keep moving on with some more.
Just read your favorites. There
okay.
The VRs also.
Okay. I get into that. Okay. This one is one called The Wanderer. Lost a page. Well, this one isn't called The Wanderer. This is called Yellow. I'll read that one instead. I couldn't find The Wanderer. I wonder where it's at. One pearly day of early May, I strolled upon the sand and saw, say, half a mile away, a man with gun in hand. A dog was cowering to his will as slow he sought to creep upon a dozen ducks so still they seemed to be asleep. When, like a streak, the dog dashed out, the ducks flashed up in flight. The fellow gave a savage shout and cursed with all his might. And as I stood somewhat amazed and gazed with eyes agog, with bitter rage his gun he raised and blazed and shot the dog. You know how dogs can yelp with pain, its blood soaked in the sand, and yet it scrawled to him again and tried to lick his hand. Forgive me, Lord, for what I've done, it seemed as if he'd said.
But once again he raised his gun. This time he shot it. Dead. What could I do? What could I say? 'Twas such a lonely place. Tongue-tied, I saw him stride away. I never saw his face. I should have bawled the bastard out. A yellow dog he slew. But worse, he proved beyond a doubt that I was yellow too. This is called The Battle of the Bulge. I don't know if you can call this one of his war poems or not. We'll find out here. This year an ocean trip I took, and as I am a Scot and like to get my money's worth, I never missed a meal. In spite of Neptune's nastiness, I ate an awful lot, yet felt as fit as if we sailed upon an even keel. But now that I am home again, I'm stricken with disgust. How many pounds of fat I've gained, I'd rather not divulge. Well, anyway, I mean to take this tummy down or bust. So here I'm suet straking in the Battle of the Bulge. No more will sausage, bacon, eggs provide my breakfast fare. On lobster I will never munch with mounds of mayonnaise. At tea I'll spartanly eschew the chocolate éclair. Roast duckling and fecu milva shall not consummate my days. No more nocturnal icebox raids, midnight spaghetti feeds. On slabs of pâté de foie gras I vow I won't indulge. Let bran and cottage cheese suffice my gastronomic needs, and lettuce be my ally in the Battle of the Bulge. To hell with you, ignoble paunch, abhorrent in my sight. I gaze at your rotundity, and savage is my frown. I'll rub you, and I'll scrub you, and I'll grub you day and night, but by the gods of symmetry, I'll swear I'll get you down. Your smooth and smug convexity, by heck, I will subdue, and when you tucker in again, with joy will I refulge. No longer of my toes will you obstruct my downward view. With might and main, I'll fight to gain the Battle of the Bulge. Now, I don't know if I pronounced those French words in there right or not, but I just kind of had to wink them. I studied a lot of languages, but French isn't one of them. I can't get that nasal. Okay. Let's see. Normandy peasant. They've taken all my fields of corn to make them strips of stripe. They've razed the house where I was born and lived in all my life. Where once I jolted with content along deep rutted lanes, they've straddled runways of cement to ground their aeroplanes. They've made me sell my bit of land and paid me with their gold. Alas, they could not understand it was my heart I sold. From my beloved soil bereft, it was my soul I gave. And now I know there's nothing left between me and the grave. They say that progress must go on, though darkly glooms the pit. Ah, well, my life is nearly gone, and I am glad of it. Then buy my land, and millions spend to sponsor war's red woe. And what will be the awful end, thank God, I'll never know. For, oh, the world is in a mess, and day by day grows worse. I've had my bit of happiness, and now I know the curse of monstrous might and speed that's blind, and see, as fails my breath, the doom of martyred humankind when science mates with death. Okay, got about 10 minutes. To do a couple more. I want to do one called The Ballad of Casey's Billy Goats. Just look it up here. The Ballad of Casey's Billy Goats. You've heard of Casey at the Bat and Casey's Tabled Dotes, but now it's time to write the rhyme of Casey's Billy Goat. Pat Casey had a billy goat. He gave the name of Seamus because it was, the neighbor said, a national disgrace. And sure enough, that animal was eminently famous for masticating every rag of laundry round the place. From shirts to skirts, prodigiously it proved its powers of chewing. The question of digestion seemed to matter not at all. But you'll agree, I think with me, its limit of misdoing was reached the day it swallowed Mrs. Rooney's old red shawl. Now, Mrs. Annie Rooney was a winsome widow woman, and many a bouncing boy had sought to make her change her name. And living just across the way, 'twas surely only human a lonesome man like Casey should be wishfully the same. So every Sunday, shaved and shined, he'd make the fine occasion to call upon the lady, and she'd take his hat and coat, and supping tea, it seemed that she might yield to his persuasion. But alas, he hadn't counted on that devastating goat. For Seamus loved his master with a deep and dumb devotion, and everywhere that Casey went, that goat would want to go. And though I cannot analyze a quadruped's emotion, they said the beast was jealous. And I reckoned it was so, for every time that Casey went to call on Mrs. Rooney, beside the gate the goat would wait with woefulness intense, until one day it chanced that they were fast becoming spoony, when Seamus spied that old red shawl aflutter on the fence. Now, Mrs. Rooney loved that shawl beyond all rhyme or reason, and maybe 'twas an heirloom or a cherished souvenir, for judging by the way she wore it season after season, it might have been as precious as a product of cashmere. So Seamus strolled towards it, and no doubt the color pleased him, for he biffed it and he sniffed it, as most any goat might do, then his melancholy vanished as a sense of hunger seized him, and he wagged his tail with rapture as he started in to chew. "Begorra, you're a daisy," said the doting Mr. Casey to the blushing Widow Rooney as they parted at the door. "With your tenderness untazen, surely you've set me heart ablazin', and I dread the day I never see me Annie any more." "Go on now with your blarney," said the widow softly sighing, and she went to pull his whiskers when dismay her bosom smote. Her old red shawl was missing where she left it bravely drying, and she saw it disappearing down the neck of Casey's goat. Fiercely flamed her Irish temper. "Look," said she, "the thaven divil. Sure, he's made me shawl his supper. Well, I hope it's to his taste. But excuse me, Mr. Casey, if I seem to be uncivil, for I'll never wed a man with a misbegotten baste." So she slammed the door and left him in a state of consternation, and he couldn't understand it till he saw that grinning goat. Then with eloquence he cussed it, and his final fulmination was a poem of profanity impossible to quote. So blasting goats and petticoats and feeling downright sinful, despairingly he wandered in to Shenanigans Shabeen. And straightway he proceeded to absorb a mighty spoonful of the deadliest variety of Shenanigans Pothine. And when he'd started homeward, it was in the early morning, but Seamus followed faithfully a yard behind his back. Then Casey slipped and stumbled, and without the slightest warning, like a lump of lead, he tumbled right across the railway track. And there he lay serenely and defied the powers to budge him, reposing like a baby with his head upon the rail. But Seamus seemed unhappy, from time to time would nudge him, though his prods of prostration were without the least avail. Then to that goatish mind, maybe a sense of fell disaster came stealing like a spectre in the dim and dreary dawn, for his bleat of warning blended with the snoring of his master in a chorus of calamity, but Casey slumbered on. Yet, oh, that goat was troubled, for his efforts were redoubled. Now he tugged at Casey's whisker, now he nibbled at his ear, now he shook him by the shoulder, and with fear becoming bolder, he bellowed like a foghorn, but the sleeper did not hear. Then up and down the railway line he scampered for assistance, but anxiously he hurried back and sought with tug and strain to pull his master off the track, when sudden in the distance he heard the roar and rumble of the fast approaching train. Did Seamus faint and falter? No, he stood there, stark and splendid. True, his tummy was distended, but he gave his horns a toss. By them his goathood's honor would be gallantly defended, and if their valor failed him, he would perish with his boss. So dauntlessly he lowered his head, and ever clearer, clearer, he heard the throb and thunder of the continental mail. He would face that mighty monster. It was coming nearer, nearer. He would fight it. He would smite it, but he'd never show his tail. Can you see that hirsute hero standing there in tragic glory? Can you hear the Pullman porters shrieking horror to the sky? No, you can't, because my story has no end so grim and gory, for Seamus did not perish, and his master did not die. At this very present moment, Casey swaggers hale and hearty, and Seamus strolls beside him with a bright bill at his throat, while the recent Mrs. Rooney is the gayest of the party, for now she's Mrs. Casey, and she's crazy for that goat. You're wondering what happened. Well, you know that truth is stranger than the wildest brand of fiction, so I'll tell you without shame. There was Seamus and his master in the face of awful danger and the giant locomotive dashing down in smoke and flame. What power on earth could save them, yet a golden inspiration to gods and goats alike may come. So in that brutish brain, a thought was born, the old red shawl. Then rearing with elation, like lightning, Seamus threw it up, flag, and stopped the train. Well, it's about 3 minutes till 5, so maybe that can be the last one. So thank you all for coming.